Thus it is applied to the reincarnating ego, as the thread on which many separate lives are strung, to the second logos, as the thread on which beings in his universe are strung, and so on. It thus denotes a function, rather than a special entity or class of entities. From each spiritual triad appears one of these threads, which at first wave vaguely in the seven great streams of life. Then, each of them is anchored, just as happened in the case of the higher triad, by the agency of the devas to a mental molecule, or unit as it is usually called, this being a particle of the fourth mental subplane, that is, the highest level of mental plane. Around this mental unit, are gathered temporary aggregations of elemental essence of the second elemental kingdom, scattering and regathering, over and over again. The vibrations of the essence gradually awaken the mental unit into faint responses, these again thrilling feebly upwards to the seed of consciousness in the triad, producing, therein vaguest internal movements. The mental unit cannot be said to have always rounded a form of its own, for there may be several of many mental units plunged into a given aggregation of essence, whilst other aggregations of essence may have only one mental unit in them, or none at all. Thus, with inconceivable slowness, the mental units become possessors of certain qualities, that is, they acquire the power of vibrating in certain ways, which are connected with thinking, and will at a later stage make thoughts possible. In this, they are helped by the devas of the second elemental kingdom, who direct upon them the vibrations to which they gradually begin to respond, and surround them with the elemental essence they, the devas, throw off from their own bodies. Furthermore, each of the seven typical groups is separated from the others by a delicate wall of monadic essence, atomic matter ensouled by the life of the second logos, the beginning of the wall of the future group soul. Page 26, diagram 11a, illustrates the process just described. The whole process is then repeated at the next lower level, vidhi diagram 11b. The thread of life ensheathed in buddhic matter, with the mental unit attached, pushes outward to the astral plane, where, by identically similar means, an astral atom is attached. Round this astral permanent atom gather temporary aggregations of elemental essence of the third elemental kingdom, scattering and regathering, as before. Similar results follow, the astral atoms being gradually awakened to faint responses, these being passed upwards to the seed of consciousness, producing therein, once more, vaguest internal movements. Thus the astral permanent atoms acquire the power of vibrating in certain ways, connected with sensation, which will at a later stage make sensation possible. As before, the work is helped by the action of the devas of the third elemental kingdom. The separating wall of each of the seven groups now acquires a second layer, formed of astral monadic essence, thus approaching a stage nearer to the wall of the future group soul. Yet once more is the process repeated, vidhi diagram 11c, when the great wave of life has passed onwards to the physical plane. The thread of life, sheathed in buddhic matter, with its attached mental unit and astral permanent atom, pushes outwards, and annexes a physical permanent atom. Round this atom etheric matter gathers, as before. The heavier physical matter, however, is more coherent than the subtler matter of the higher planes, and consequently a much longer term of life is observed. Page 27. Then, as the etheric types of the proto-metals, and later proto-metals, metals, non-metals, and minerals are formed, the devas of the etheric subplanes submerge the physical permanent atoms into one or other of the seven etheric types to which they belong. Thus is begun the long physical evolution of the permanent atom. Again, on the atomic subplane of the physical, a third layer is added to the separating wall, which will form the envelope of the future group soul. In this manner is formed what is often called the lower triad, consisting of a mental unit, an astral permanent atom, and a physical permanent atom. Diagram 12 shows the stage which we have now reached, the monad, with his three aspects, having been provided with a higher triad of atma-buddhi-manas, and the higher triad in its turn having been furnished with a lower triad of lower manas karmasthula. It will be remembered that the matter of each plane is of seven fundamental types, according to the dominance of one or other of the three great attributes of matter, tamas, rajas, and sattva. Hence the permanent atoms may be chosen from any one of these types. It appears, however, that each monad chooses all his permanent atoms from the same type of matter. The choice is made by the monad, although, as we have seen, the actual attachment is done by the devas. The monad himself belongs, of course, to one of the seven fundamental types of monads, and this is his first great determining characteristic, his fundamental color, keynote, or temperament. The monad may choose to use his new pilgrimage for the strengthening and increasing of this special characteristic, in which case, the devas will attach to his sutratma permanent atoms belonging to the group or type of matter corresponding to the type of the monad. Such a choice would result in the, page 28, secondary color, that of the permanent atoms, emphasizing and strengthening the first. In the later evolution, the powers and weaknesses of that doubled temperament would show themselves, with great force. On the other hand, the monad may choose to use his new pilgrimage for the unfolding of another aspect of his nature. Then the devas will attach to his sutratma atoms belonging to another matter group, in which the aspect the monad wishes to develop is predominant. This choice would result in the secondary keynote or temperament modifying the first, with corresponding results in later evolution. This latter choice is obviously by far more frequent, and it tends to greater complexity of character, especially in the final stages of human evolution, when the influence of the monad makes itself felt more strongly. Whilst the permanent atoms of both the higher and the lower triads belong to the same type, the bodies of the higher triad, being, once formed, relatively permanent, reproduce definitely the keynote of their permanent atoms. But in the case of the bodies of the lower triad, various other causes operate in the determination of the choice of materials for these bodies. The monad can exert no direct action on the permanent atoms, nor could there be such direct action until the higher triad has reached a high stage of evolution. But the monad can and does affect the higher triad, and through that exerts an indirect and continual action on the permanent atoms. The higher triad draws most of his energy, and all his directive capacity, from the second logos. But his own special activity does not concern itself with the shaping and building work of the second logos, being directed rather, to the evolution of the atoms themselves, in association with the third logos. This energy from the higher triad confines itself to the atomic subplanes, and until the fourth round, appears to spend itself chiefly on the permanent atoms. The use of the permanent atoms is, of course, to preserve within themselves, as powers of vibration, the results of all the experiences through which they have passed. We may take the physical permanent atom as illustrating this process. A physical impact of any kind will set up, in the physical body it strikes, vibrations corresponding to its own. These vibrations will be transmitted, by direct concussion if they are violent, and in all cases by the bodhic life web to the physical permanent atom. Such a vibration, forced on the atom from the outside, becomes in the atom a vibratory power, a tendency to repeat the vibration. Thus through the whole life of the physical body, every impact leaves an impression on the physical permanent atom. At the end of the life of the physical body, the physical permanent atom has in this way stored up innumerable powers of vibration. The same process takes place in the case of the permanent atom or unit in each of the bodies of man. Moreover, the student will by now be familiar with the fact that the permanent atoms, as their name implies, remain permanently with a human entity throughout the whole of his many incarnations, being, page 29, in fact, the only portions of his various bodies which survive and remain permanently with the evolving ego in the causal body. The vortex, which is the atom, is the life of the third logos. The wall of the atom, gradually formed on the surface of this vortex, is made by the descent of the life of the second logos. But the second logos only faintly traces the outline of the spirally, as filmy channels, he does not vivify them. It is the life of the monad which, flowing down, vivifies the first of the spirally, making it a working part of the atom. This takes place in the first round. Similarly, in each successive round, another of the spirally is vivified and brought into activity. The first set of spirally is used by the prana which affects the dense body, the second set with the prana used by the etheric double, the third set by the prana affecting the astral body, thus developing the power of sensation. The fourth set is used by the prana of karma manas, making it fur to be used for the building of a brain as the instrument of thought. As we are now in the fourth round, the normal number of spirali at work is four, both in the permanent atoms, and in the ordinary unattached atoms. But in the case of a highly evolved man, the permanent atom may have five spirali at work, or even six. The fifth set of spirali will in the normal course, be developed in the fifth round, but advanced people, as said, can by certain yoga practices evolve even now both the fifth and sixth sets of spirali. In addition to the permanent atoms themselves, the monad also begins to work in a similar fashion on other atoms that are drawn round the permanent atom. Such vivification, however, is temporary only, as, when the physical body is broken up, these atoms return to the general store of atomic matter. They may then be taken up and used by some other monad, being, of course, now more easily vivified again, on account of their former experience. This work takes place with all the permanent atoms of the monad, such atoms, thus evolving more rapidly than they would otherwise do, owing to their association with the monad. Page 30, Chapter 8. The Creative Hierarchies. As promised in Chapter 6, we now come to describe more in detail the hierarchies of beings, of various grades of power and intelligence, who build the universe, and help the monads to undertake their vast pilgrimage through the worlds of matter. The information at present available is somewhat fragmentary and ill-defined. Whilst recognizing that this is so, we must endeavor to make the most of such few facts at our disposal. We have already seen that the One Existence, the Supreme, from whom all manifested life proceeds, expresses Himself in a threefold manner, as the Trimurti, the Trinity. This, of course, is recognized in practically every religion, under many names, for example, Sat, Chit, Ananda, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Ichha, Jnana, Kriya, Kochma, Bina, Kepha, Father, Son and Holy Spirit, Power, Wisdom, Love, Will, Wisdom and Activity, etc. etc. Around the primary Trinity, in the light coming forth from them, we find those who are called the Seven. The Hindu speaks of the seven sons of Aditi. They have been called the seven spirits in the sun. In Egypt they were known as the seven mystery gods. In Zoroastrianism they are named the seven Amshasbans. In Judaism they are the seven Sephiroth. Among Christians and Mohammedans, they are the seven archangels, the seven spirits before the throne. In Theosophy they are usually termed the seven planetary logoi, each administering his own department of the solar system. They have ever been identified with the seven sacred planets, the planets being their physical bodies. Round the seven, is a wider circle. There come the creative hierarchies, as they are called, the 12 creative orders of the universe. These are headed by the 12 great gods, that appear in ancient stories, and that are symbolized in the familiar signs of the zodiac. For the zodiac is a very ancient symbolic conception, in which the plane of the solar system is written. When it is said that a planet rules or is lord of one of the signs of the zodiac, the meaning is that the planetary spirit or logos has dominion over one of the 12 creative hierarchies which, under his control and direction, build up his kingdom, and help the monads to evolve. The 12 creative hierarchies are thus intimately concerned with the building of the universe. These hierarchies of intelligence have, in past kalpas or universes, completed their own evolution, and thus become co-workers with the One Will, with Ishvara, in the shaping of a new universe, or Brahmanda. They are the architects, the builders of the solar systems. They fill our solar system, and to them, we human beings owe our evolution, spiritual, intellectual and physical. It is they who awaken the consciousness of the monad and his ray to the dim sense of others, and of I, and with this, a thrill of longing for a more clearly defined sense of the I and of others, this being the individual will to live, which leads them forth into the denser worlds, wherein alone such sharper definition is possible. Page 31. At the present stage of evolution, out of the 12 creative hierarchies, four have passed onward into liberation, and one is touching the threshold of liberation. Thus five have passed away from the ken of even the greatest and the most developed teachers of our world. There remain, therefore, seven only, with whom we have to deal. Part of the work which some of them do, viz., the attaching of the permanent atoms, has already been described in chapters 5 and 7. This will now be repeated for the sake of completeness, with such few further particulars as are available, the whole work being classified into the departments for which each of the remaining seven hierarchies is responsible. A. The Arupa Creative Orders. 1. The first of the Arupa, or formless, creative orders, is described by words connected with fire. They are known as formless fiery breaths, lords of fire, divine flames, divine fires, fiery lions, lions of life. They are described also as the life and heart of the universe, the Atma, the cosmic will. Through them comes the divine ray of Paramatma, that awakens Atma in the monads. 2. The second order is twofold in its nature, and is known as the twofold units, representing fire and ether. They stand for cosmic buddhi, the wisdom of the system, manifested reason. Their function is to arouse buddhi in the monads. 3. The third order is known as the triads, representing fire, ether and water. They stand for mahat, the cosmic manas or activity. Their function is to awaken manas in the monads, be the rupa creative orders. 4. The fourth creative hierarchy consists of the monads themselves. At first sight, it may appear curious that the monads themselves should be classed with the other orders, but a little thought will show that the classification is a proper one, the monads clearly having a great deal to do with their own evolution. It is by no means outer agencies alone that determine their involution and devolution. Let us briefly recapitulate some of the factors due to the monads themselves. 1. Being of the first logos, his will to manifest is also their will, they are self-moved. Page 32. 2. It is the monads who shine forth sending out their life, which builds the ray or higher triad, and works through it. 3. It is the monads who choose the type of permanent atoms which are to be attached to them. 4. The third outpouring, resulting from which the causal body is formed, comes through the monads themselves. 5. The monads themselves pour down their life into and vivify the spirally in the atoms, both permanent and other. 6. The monads, as evolution proceeds, steadily pour down more and more of their lives, gradually getting more closely into touch with their race, their individuality, and also through the individuality, with the personality. 5. The fifth creative hierarchy is named that of Makara, and has for its symbol, the pentagon. In them the dual spiritual and dual physical aspects of nature appear, the positive and negative, at war with each other. They are the rebels of many myths and legends. Some of them are known as Asuras, and were the fruits of the first chain. They are beings of great spiritual power and knowledge. Deep within themselves they hide the germ of Ahamkara, the eye-making faculty which is necessary for human evolution. The fifth hierarchy guides the vibratory wave from the aspect of Atma of the monad to an atom of Atma, which it attaches as a permanent atom. 6. The sixth creative hierarchy contains some who are known as Agnishvatas, and also as the sixfold Dhyanis. They are the fruit of the second planetary chain. This hierarchy includes also great hosts of Devas. They guide the vibratory wave from the wisdom aspect of the monad to the buddhic permanent atom. Further, they give to man all but the Atma and the physical body, and so are called the givers of the five middle principles. They guide the monad in obtaining the permanent atoms, including of course the mental unit, connected with these principles, that is, buddhi, manas, lower manas, karma, and the etheric double. They have especially to deal with the intellectual evolution of man. 7. The seventh creative hierarchy contains those known as Lunar Bhitris, or Bahishad Bhitris. These are the fruit of the third chain. Page 33. They have to do with the physical evolution of man. Also belonging to the seventh hierarchy, are vast hosts of Devas, the lower nature spirits, who have to do with the actual building of the body of man. For the convenience of the student, a tabular statement of the creative hierarchies is appended. The seven creative hierarchies class No. Name function of evolution in monads. Notes: Arupa 1 fiery breathes awaken, Atma 2 twofold units awaken, Buddhi 3 triads awaken, Manas Rupa 4 monads will to manifest, shine forth and build ray. Choose type of permanent atoms. Channels for third outpouring vivifies spirally of atoms. Influence individuality and personality. 5 Makara including Asuras, attach atom of Atma. Asuras were fruit of first chain. 6 Agneshvatas give 5 middle principles. Attach 4 permanent atoms and mental unit concerned with intellectual evolution of man. Fruit of second chain. 7 Bahishads concerned with physical evolution of man. Fruit of third chain, page 34, chapter 9. Group souls. We have now arrived at the stage where each monad is provided with a higher triad, consisting of a permanent atom of the planes of Atma, Buddhi and Manas, and a lower triad consisting of a mental unit, an astral and a physical permanent atom. These particles of matter are, of course, merely nuclei which enable the monad, through his ray, to come into touch with the various planes, and to build bodies or vehicles through which he can gather experiences from, and learn to express himself on, those planes of existence. In order to understand the mechanism by which these results are achieved, we must next study the phenomena known as group souls. We have already seen that as the atoms of the lower triad are attached to the sutratma, or life thread, thin films of matter come into existence, separating the 7 main types of triads from one another. Thus are formed the 7 primary groups or rays of triads which, by repeated division and subdivision, will give rise to large numbers of group souls in the various kingdoms of life. These 7 great types or rays of group souls remain separate and distinct throughout all the vicissitudes of their evolution, that is to say, the 7 types evolve in parallel streams, the streams never uniting or merging into one another. The 7 types are clearly distinguishable in all kingdoms, the successive forms taken by any one of them making a connected series of elementals, minerals, vegetables, or animals, as the case may be. These 7 primary group souls appear as vague, filmy forms, floating in the great ocean of matter as balloons might float in the sea. They are seen first on the mental plane, becoming more clearly outlined on the astral plane, and still more so on the physical plane. They float, one in each of the 7 main streams of the second life wave. Within each primary group soul there are, of course, innumerable lower triads, each connected by the radiant golden thread to its higher triad, these again depending from the overhanging monad. As yet no golden life web appears round the triads, this will not come into existence until the mineral kingdom is reached. Diagram 13 roughly illustrates the stage now reached. The very small number of triads, which the limitations of space make it possible to show in the 7 group souls, must be considered as representing vastly larger numbers, with, of course, their connected higher triads and monads. Page 35, the stage shown in the diagram is that at which the thin film or veil separating the 7 primary group souls has received its 3 layers. These consist of mental essence, astral monadic essence and atomic matter of the physical plane. As already stated, these films or veils will eventually form their containing walls or envelopes of the group souls proper. It should be noted that these envelopes are formed of matter of the same matter group as that to which the triads themselves belong. The general plan of the evolutionary process, more strictly the involutionary processes, as we have seen, a gradual differentiation of the great stream of divine life, until, after repeated division and subdivision, definite individualization as a human being is attained, after which no further subdivision is possible, a human entity being an indivisible unit or soul. Group souls, which exist in the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms, thus represent intermediate stages leading up to complete differentiation into separate human entities or units. Hence in the 3 kingdoms mentioned, we do not find one soul in a block of mineral, or a plant or an animal. Instead of this, we find one block of life, if we may use such a term, ensouling a vast quantity of mineral substance, a large number of plants or trees, or a number of animals. Into the details of these we will enter later, confining ourselves for the moment to a consideration of the general function and purpose of the group souls. The best physical analogy of a group soul is perhaps the oriental one of water in a bucket. If a glassful of water be taken from the bucket, it represents the solar portion of Solifse, a single plant or animal. For the time being, the water in the glass is quite separate from that in the bucket, and, moreover, it takes the shape of the glass which contains it. So may a portion of a group soul occupy and vivify a vegetable or animal form. An animal, during its life on the physical plane, and for some time after that in the astral world, has a soul, just as separate as a man's, but when the animal comes to the end of its astral life, that soul does not reincarnate in a single body, but returns to the group soul, which is a kind of reservoir of soul matter. The death of the animal would thus, in our analogy, be represented by pouring water from the glass back into the bucket. Just as the water from the glass becomes thoroughly mixed and united with the water in the bucket, so does the portion of the soul from the particular animal become mixed and incorporated with the total soul in the group soul. And just as it would not be possible to take again from the bucket, page 36, another glassful consisting of the same molecules of water, so is it not possible for the same portion of the total soul in the group soul to inhabit another particular animal form. Continuing the analogy further, it is clear that we could fill many glasses with water from the bucket at the same time. Equally is it possible for many animal forms to be ensouled and vivified by the same group soul. Further, if we suppose that any given glassful of water becomes colored with a distinctive hue of its own, then, when the water is poured back into the bucket, that coloring matter will be distributed throughout the whole of the water in the bucket, the color of all the water in the bucket being thereby to some extent modified. If we consider the coloring matter to represent experiences or qualities acquired by a particular animal, then, when the portion of soul vivifying that animal returns to its parent group soul, those experiences or qualities will become part of the general stock of the whole group soul and be shared by every other part of it equally, though in a lesser degree than that in which the experience existed in the particular animal to whom it occurred. That is, we may say that the experiences concentrated in a particular animal are spread, in a diluted form, over the whole group soul to which the animal is attached. There is an exact resemblance between the group soul in the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms, and a human child in its prenatal life. Just as the human child is nourished by the life stream of the mother, so does the protective envelope of the group soul nourish the lives within it, receiving and distributing the experiences gathered in it. The circulating life is that of the parent. The young plants or animals are not yet ready for individual life, but must depend on the parent for nourishment. Thus the germinating lives of mineral, vegetable, and animal are nourished by the envelope of elemental and monadic essence, thrilling with logoic life. The evolution of lives in these early stages in the group soul depends upon three factors: a. First, and chiefly, the cherishing life of the logos; b. the cooperating guidance of the devas; c. their own blind pressure against the limits of the enclosing form. The general mechanism of the process by which, through these three agencies, the vibratory powers of the atoms in the lower triads are awakened, is as follows. The second logos, acting in the envelope of the group soul, energizes the physical permanent atoms. These are plunged, by the action of the devas, into the various conditions offered by the mineral kingdom, where each atom is attached to many mineral particles. The experiences, consisting of heat, page 37, cold, blows, pressure, shaking, etc., through which the mineral substances pass, are conveyed to the attached physical permanent atoms, thus arousing vague answers of sympathetic vibration from the deeply slumbering consciousness within. When any permanent atom has reached a certain responsiveness, or when a mineral form, that is, the particles to which the permanent atom is attached, is broken up, the group soul withdraws that atom into itself. The experience is acquired by the datomi.e. The vibrations it has been forced to execute remain in it as powers of vibrating in particular ways, as vibratory powers in short. Then the permanent atom, having lost its embodiment in a mineral form, remains, as we might say, naked in its group soul. Here it continues to repeat the vibrations it has learnt, repeating its life experiences, and thus setting up pulses which run through the envelope of the group soul, and are thereby conveyed to the other permanent atoms contained in that group soul. Thus each permanent atom affects and helps all others. Now another important phenomenon arises.